Please review for me the 9 levels of power. Rin.
Strength of mind and body.
Pure.
Direction of energy.
To.
Harmony with the universe.
Sha.
Healing self and others.
Kai.
Premonition of danger.
Jin.
Knowing the thoughts of others.
Retsu.
Mastery of time and space.
Zai.
Controlling the elements of nature.
Zen.
Enlightenment.
You have done well. You have passed every test. This scroll is your license as Master of Ninjutsu. It contains the wisdom of every generation of ninja that has passed before you. Years from now, you will add your knowledge to this scroll and pass it on to your closest student.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, and of course, the black ninja across from me is Sam Stepanenko. See, you can't hear him because he's ninja.
Ah, you busted me.
I tried my ninja thing, and I held a twig to see if anybody would notice me. I was like trying to blend in with the surroundings, make it look like I'm a tree. Nobody saw me.
That would help if you left your house. Just saying. It's miserable here today, so it is a stay-in kind of day.
It is a rainy, rainy day, so we watched a ninja movie.
Set in a tropical climate.
Set in a tropical climate. This is Enter the Ninja from 1981, responsible, at least in part, for starting the ninja craze of the 80s that still hasn't reemerged as a craze.
Well, it started to about 10 years ago. There was that movie it's just called Ninja.
There was Ninja, and I remember Ninja Assassin.
Yeah, Ninja Assassin, yeah.
That Straczynski wrote and was produced by the Wachowskis.
Yeah, and one of them was Shokasugi, who's in this movie.
Ninja Assassin was his last film. Yeah. Then Shokasugi certainly made a career out of being a ninja.
He certainly did.
Starting with this movie.
Yes, he did. I mean, those ninja movies did fairly well and got fairly decent reviews, but they just never sort of materialized into something new.
Yeah, cheap to make. And it's now they kind of, if you see it, like maybe they'll turn up on the Daredevil TV show and they'll beat them up. Like ninjas, if you watch a cartoon or film that has ninjas, they're thugs.
Yeah.
They're treated that way anyway, and there are the hired help. And so bringing that mysticism back, and that's something I want to do with our remake, is
which is not in this at all.
No, I mean, part of the mysticism, that's just the folklore, but the folklore which makes the movies fun.
Yes.
I mean, the reality of ninjas is they were spies, they were assassins, and they could have been the butcher down the street. Into society.
They were the original CIA.
They were. I mean, as far as they weren't viewed as an honorable profession by the Japanese standards of the shogun and stuff. I mean, the shonen would later take on some of the attributes that they would do. Certainly wasn't an honorable form of warfare or combat. But
they also served a purpose.
They served a purpose. And Icon wanted to grab on to some of that as well.
And that's where, like, right from the beginning, that's where I want to change that opening scene. because that opening scene's a fucking joke.
Although, you know, were you just like me? You're like, I watched this movie, and I'm like, okay, I'm really excited. You know, I remember liking these ninja movies as a kid, and then I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That was exactly it. I'm like, oh my God. I mean, the martial arts are bad.
It is. I mean, Franco Nero had no martial arts experience, and the guy who did a lot of the development, who was going to star in it,
had no acting experience.
Had no acting experience. So he kind of did.
It wouldn't have mattered because De Niro was dubbed over anyhow.
Yeah, that's what bugged me. At the end of the day, Franco Nero in the script was supposed to be Texan, and he couldn't make an American or a Texan accent.
No, he's an Italian actor. Just an interesting factoid that kind of blew me away is that he has been with Vanessa Redgrave since 1967.
Way to go, dude.
Yeah, that kind of surprised me. And they didn't get married until 2006.
Oh, wow.
So they were together for over 40 years before they got married.
Well,
and they're still married, which is highly unusual for a relationship that goes that long and then getting into getting married. But yeah, they've got one of the longest relationships in Hollywood, and nobody even knows about it.
This movie spawned two sequels.
Yes, Shokosuke's the only one who's in both of them.
Yeah,
which is funny because his character dies at the end of this one.
Yeah, he's different character every time. Yeah. And then inspired the American Ninja franchise, which I think was a total of 5 films.
Yes, with Michael Dudikoff.
Right. I seem to remember, and part of me wants to keep going. I watched Ninja Assassin last night because I'm still in a ninja mood. But I kind of want to watch one of the older ones. And I seem to remember the second one being pretty good for this particular franchise. And then the third one, Ninja 3, The Domination, I remember being pretty bad compared to this one.
Yes. And that's what the Wikipedia says as well, is that the second one is by far the best of the three.
And that was the one with the female, the American
female?
Ninja
3.
Ninja 3. It was The Domination. Yeah, I remember that one being terrible.
Yeah. I think when you said Let's Do Enter the Ninja, I was thinking of the American Ninja series, to be honest with you. If I remember now, after watching it, liking the American Ninja series better than the Enter the Ninja series.
Yeah, I was the same way. But I was thinking Shokosugi at the time. Yeah. So if we're going to, I mean, maybe we'll do some more ninja stuff down the road. And please let us know if you want us to do some more ninja stuff. But if we're going to start with one, it should be Shokosugi.
It should be, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it should be. I'm sure one or both of us has worked him into our cast somehow.
I have not, but
okay. I did.
I respected his retirement.
Yeah. I did.
In hindsight, yes, I know exactly where I would put him, and I don't know why I didn't think about it. But yeah,
and I'm thinking you'd probably put him in the same spot I would. So
yeah,
right. Because I mean, at this point, it's the only role he would fit.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But we'll get to that at the end of the show when we do our casting, which is a lot of fun. But we got to come up with a new plot for this movie and some new way of doing it. But first, we'll talk about this movie. Okay, Enter the Ninja, canon film from 1981, rated R.
Why, I don't know.
Based on a story by Mike Stone. Based because it's definitely not an adaptation of the novel Ninja. But Mike Stone was actually the stunt guy who was supposed to be the star of this that wound up being replaced by Franco Nero. And he did the stunts in the American Ninja movie, and he was an actor and writer of a movie called Tiger Shark. The screenplay story was by Dick Desmond, and uncredited writing went to the director, Menahem Golan from Golan and Globus. Canon Films, one of the men who owned Canon Films, went and directed this, and that was because somebody didn't want him doing Death Wish 2.
Yes, I find that very funny, which was also a Canon film.
Yeah. In fact, the director of that film was also supposed to direct this one, and that because Globus got his butt kicked off his own movie.
Got his knickers in a twist, that guy.
Yeah, so he went and directed this one instead. And clearly has no idea what ninjas actually are. I think he heard the word. He thought that would be cool and something different for a martial arts movie.
Yeah, and it was at the time. And I mean, and the costumes are, I mean, like, I'm going to talk about it right now. The white costume our lead wears.
Yeah.
Ninjas would never wear white because it doesn't allow you to blend into the darkness.
Yeah. I actually read a little bit just about ninjas in general. And ninjas had a very different look than what the movie was versions are, but they figure, because I mean, this is a long time ago, like 14th century when that started, but they figured ninjas would probably wear black with a bit of red so the blood wouldn't show.
Yes.
Like, ew.
But it makes sense.
It does make sense.
Yeah, and of course, and black certainly, I mean, given the nature of their business being spies and assassins, most of that work's done in the dark.
Right? Yeah. So dark layered clothing, absolutely. And I do have some thoughts about Americanizing our American ninja.
Yes.
Which I think will be fun. But yeah, white doesn't make a lot of sense. Gets dirty, easy to spot. I don't know how nobody noticed that boy.
I mean, the dark red that the red shirts wore.
Yes. I love that you said that because I wrote that down. Yes. I'm like, red ninjas are the red shirts. They're like Star Trek.
Yes. And I actually made that comment while we were watching it with Val. Val watched part of this with me. And yeah, the first thing I said was, oh, look, red shirts.
It was happened in that training test thing where all the, yeah, that was what
I
said.
It was his graduation exercise.
Yeah, and that's what I'm like, red shirts, I actually did it as a math equation. Red ninja equal red shirts from Star Trek equal dead ninja.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get into the changes, but that has got to go.
I do have some thoughts about that.
And as do I, and we'll see if we're on the same wavelength or if maybe we can, between the two of us, come up with something really interesting.
Yeah, I still like having a nice, strong kind of opening like that.
Well, it introduces your protagonist and one of your antagonists, right?
Yeah.
So it's an important scene.
Yeah.
I just don't think this one was particularly effective.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we opened the show with just shortly after that, after this big kind of action sequence. It's not that action-y by today's standards anymore. But when we learn it was all kind of a ruse as a final test, although some real people got really hurt.
Yes.
Except for the guy who got his head cut off.
Yeah.
The old master. I mean, yeah, it was an assassination test, and then he's presented with this scroll that is his license to ninja.
Yes.
Now, the one big part of this movie that really fucking bugs me is, why is that Gaijin here in the first place? Like, how did this white guy get into this school? It's like, hey, I looked in the papers, like, want to be a ninja?
Yeah, well,
come to this school.
He wasn't the only one. He wasn't the only one who was Caucasian.
Yeah.
Because there's the one guy who has the cut across his face. He's also Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big gap in the explanation as to why he's there.
Yeah.
Right?
That'd be another big change. Because that was something I really liked, was Hasegawa, Shokusugi's character, really didn't like him being here. He's very traditional. This is an art that shouldn't be taught outside of our own people.
Yeah. And there's also this,
and it's a secret thing.
It is very much a secret thing.
Yeah.
There's also probably the best line in the movie, the best written piece in the movie, was in that opening scene after when Cole asks the master why Hasegawa is so angry. Mm-hmm. And then the master says something along the lines, well, he's a warrior, and he's living in a time where his type of skills aren't needed anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, something along those lines. And it's really well written. And it's, like I said, it's the only good piece of dialogue in the whole fucking movie. And is that where it just felt right, like it actually answered a question and gave you some backstory on a character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just wasn't enough for me, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. It was at least we had some for Hasegawa, for sure.
Yes.
But why was Cole there? Okay, we know there's little pieces we get. We know he was in the military with his buddy Frank, who he goes to see in the Philippines.
Yes.
Where this majority of this movie is shot, except for
and
I think the school stuff was actually in Japan. Yeah. But the rest of it was in the Philippines.
Yeah. The setting, to be honest with you, the setting isn't all that important, but
no, not at all. I mean, if you guys were paying attention to us a few weeks ago when we covered They Call Me Trinity, did the land grab story and how that all played out in that movie. This is kind of similar.
It is kind of similar, yeah.
And that's, we're going to have to do some work on that because Frank has bought this plantation, coconut plantation, and they've got workers, but this rich developer wants the land. Why? I don't know.
They do explain that.
Do they?
Yes. It's they feel it's oil rich. They had a geotechnical study done on it, and they believe there's a large oil deposit under his land.
So they're being trained to intimidate Frank and his wife, his faithful wife, Marianne.
I'm getting rid of that whole part of the story.
Gone.
So, yeah.
Gone.
Yeah.
That made me feel icky just watching it.
It, 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 yeah, it did. It didn't, and it didn't serve the story in any way.
No. Frank has been, he's got a drinking problem. Apparently made him impotent.
Yes.
So she's turned to Franco Nero and his mighty mustache for some loving. And I think Frank's actually kind of okay with it, but kind of not. He's a little conflicted about it, even though he kind of told Cold to do it.
And then at the same time, when he suspects it's actually happened, has a passive aggressive conversation with her right before he gets killed.
Yeah. Well, and did the same with Cole too.
Yes.
Like, it, even though he kind of said, "Hey, do it."
But it doesn't serve the story in any way.
No, yeah. it's kind of icky. I mean, I don't mind there being complexity there, but that's just gross.
Yes. Ick. It's one thing to have an open relationship, but it's another thing to whore your wife out to your best friend.
Not that she seemed too upset about it.
No. No. Really briefly, I want to talk about the acting in this movie because there are some actors with really impressive bodies of work in this movie, and the performances were really, really stiff and rigid for everybody.
They were. And
except for Dollar.
This comes from, I think, somebody who's a much better producer than a director.
Yes.
Like, all right, we got the shot. Let's move on. We got the shot. Let's move on. But this is a good time to do the cast, and we can get some commentary from you as I go through this, because I think this would be great to do. Of course, the movie, I said, was directed by Menahem Golan from Golan and Globus. And we've actually talked about other canon films, specifically episode 20, Cyborg, which he would have produced, and episode 22, Masters of the Universe, which he also produced.
Yes, neither of which I got to be on.
No, those are pre-Sam episodes. Yes. I'm sure you would have liked to have at least talked about one of those, too.
Oh, both of them. I remember being excited about Cyborg and being really, really disappointed.
Yeah, we had a lot to say, and was Trish angry. To this day, I still hear about how much she hated that movie.
I can't say I blame her.
Holds it against us from having to make her watch it. Okay, starring Franco Nero, who's still working.
Yeah,
I mean, he was in John Wick 2 fairly recently.
He's coming up in the new Django Unchained.
Yeah, there's I was happy to see there was a new Django something coming. I love
and
it.
He's the original Django.
He is. Yes, he is.
And I think it's pretty cool that Tarantino's including him in his sort of revisitation of that franchise.
Yeah, I think he was in Django Unchained as well.
He was a short cameo.
I remember him being in there. And you probably saw him in Die Hard 2 as well. Lots of people saw that movie.
Yes, just a few.
Just a few. A couple people. Susan George played the wife to the Frank character, Mary Ann. She was in Straw Dogs, which we'll talk about someday because it's been remade, and Mandingo.
Yes.
Which we may or may not talk about one day.
Yeah. And she's in Thatcher Pussycat Kill Kill Kill, I think.
I would love to talk about blaxploitation, but me being the blonde haired, blue eyed white guy, I feel it's a little disingenuous me talking about that kind of movie.
Yeah, it's tough being Caucasian and just talking about that particular genre because there's so many landmines that you're walking around in that type of conversation, and it's interesting because I think our perspective would be very interesting, but it's at the same time it's always risky. Yeah.
So maybe someday, but I'll have to get some other co-hosts in here too. I will just say hi and bye.
Yeah, to balance it all out, make it a fair, well-rounded conversation.
Yeah, because I don't feel like I have the knowledge base for that. Sho Kasugi, of course, we actually talked about in episode 56.
Blind Fury,
which, again, was another movie I really loved, but wasn't as good as I remembered.
Yes, and that's a common theme through this, as I'm sure you've heard us say it lots, is a lot of this does sort of tarnish some childhood memories for us. We watch stuff that we thought we loved, and we realized that we had rose-colored glasses.
Mm-hmm. Christopher George plays Venerius. He's had a long career when he was around. Chisholm, El Dorado, Rat Patrol. I mean, his resume is huge, and it's weird that we've never talked about it.
It is weird, and it's also funny because when you're watching this movie, you can see his moments where you can see that he is a really good actor.
And then the death scene happens.
And then there's just those moments. For this time, he's just over the top, and you can tell it's direction again. Yeah. This movie, the bad acting is not the actors, it's the direction.
Oh, when he takes the ninja star to the chest, I'm like, wow, this is like high school drama type of over dramatic death. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing, and it was, I mean, it. so much of this is so campy.
Yeah.
I don't think it was deliberate.
Well, yeah. I mean, there were a lot more of these kind of low-budget, fire-them-out type of movies back in the 80s, for sure. And it was just kind of par for the course for canon. But as we get older and we're starting to see how some of the stuff in this movie ages, it's like, whoa, this did not age well. And it's amazing that we didn't see through it in the 80s.
And you know what? We probably did.
It reviewed fairly well in the 80s.
It did. Because all things aside, it is still fun. In its badness.
Yeah.
Right? So, and I think that might be, and because it was kind of unique, I think that's part of why it got a lot of the love that maybe it doesn't necessarily deserve now.
No, it seems to be getting a much different criticism for its badness these days.
Yes, yeah.
And it does come off, like, undeliberately funny.
Yes.
And you could easily lean into that and do a full-blown comedy based on the silliness that's in this movie.
You could. I don't think I want to, but no. But you could.
Yeah, that's not you and me. So, no. But, I mean, I thought about it. I'm like, oh, you could really lean into this and make a comedy, but you could only get away with that once. But, yeah. The first thing I thought about, like, this is 0 hour in Airplane. You could easily just make fun of these crazy bits in this movie and lean into it harder and, like, see, it really was a comedy.
Yes. Yeah. From the acting all the way through the martial arts, which looks so clumsy now.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think we're spoiled by things like The Matrix and the
John Wick's got John a lot Wick's, of martial arts in it, mixed in with that gunplay.
The things like Equilibrium as well. Like there's all these movies where
The Raid,
the Raid, the Into the Badlands TV series, which I've talked about before,
And I'm sure you will again later today.
Probably, but and a lot of it's wire work, but it brings a gracefulness to the martial arts that we didn't see in the 80s.
And that's something this movie probably should have done, is gone to some of that wire work and, like, a little bit of the over-top skills, like, maybe that a normal human couldn't do. There's more ninja lore in Remo Williams than there is in this movie.
Yes.
And another movie that did it badly.
Yes. Yes, I have to agree with you. And I was watching this, I'm thinking, oh, look, we went back to Trinity with the land grab thing, and I was watching going, oh, this feels like when we were watching Remo and realized how bad the martial arts that were there really were.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, it dug up a lot of recent traumas.
Yes.
Continuing on with cast here, low-budget Charlton Heston, Alex Courtney, plays Frank. Did you not think that?
Yes, and he reminded me of somebody else too, Art Garfunkel.
If Art Garfunkel and Charlton Heston had a baby.
Yes. Yeah.
It would be Alex Courtney.
Oh, he was so bad.
He really was. But I was greatly amused by it because I just kept thinking, like, oh, it's Charlton Heston. Yeah. He's talking through his teeth. Oh, boy. Will Hare was Dollars. He was in Silent Night, Deadly Night. You might remember that scene where he's like, Christmas is the most frightening time of the year. That's that dude.
I mean, he was obviously there for comedic effect. Like, that was his role in the movie. Like, that he was
the comedy sidekick. Yeah. I honestly thought he was just going to be there to, you know, be that street guy. He's selling porno and watches.
Yes.
And I'm like, are you sure this isn't a comedy?
Yeah. And I mean, he was the only one that was clearly deliberately comedic. Right?
Yeah.
He was there to relieve the tension from the action. And the situation of this uber bad guy, along with the uber bad ninja and his evil henchmen, it has all the tropes and it handles every single one of them poorly.
Yeah. I mean, in hindsight, I could see him being useful in our movie because, you know, he's this guy who's got his ear to the ground. He's...
I did forget to cast him, but I think that you could use him again for the lightheartedness of that you need sometimes in a darker film.
Yeah.
As long as you successfully get the darkness.
Yeah.
But
I see him more as a fixer type of character.
Yeah, and you give him more to do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I totally agree with you there. Zaki Noy was the Hook. Let's talk about the Hook.
Oh my.
This short, dumpy little dude with a hook for a hand. thus the name Hook.
Could have been fun.
He's kind of the villainous comic relief where he's in charge of the troops.
He's incompetent.
He's incompetent, but he's the one who's been put in charge of hiring the locals for Venerius to manhandle the competition, and it's thugs and whatnot. That's kind of what this dude's job is, and he's not terribly incapable either. I mean, we see him at the hiring phase, and Venerius says, okay, I need 10 good men. Anybody want to step up? And one guy steps up, and it's like, all right, kill this dude with the hook, this little fat fuck with the hook. And guy walks up to him, and the hook just sticks his hook into the guy's cock, and yeah. Like, this is why this guy's here.
Yes, again, it's character development. They don't really show that he actually is a bit of a badass. Yeah. That he's just run into a situation that he has never run into before. He's run into somebody who's extremely competent.
Yeah, he's used to being a bully unchallenged.
Yes, and now he's met somebody who's more than capable of rising to that challenge.
Yeah, and Cole just, every chance he gets, takes the moment to embarrass this little fat fucker.
Yes, which I enjoyed. I actually did enjoy that part.
I did.
When he takes his hook, the bloody stump at the end of the hook was a little bit odd to me.
Yeah, it's not like the hook is in his arm. Yeah. That's not how these things work.
Yeah, there were some decisions there that are questionable all the way through the movie.
I thought it was kind of cartoon funny when Cole just kind of takes his hook and puts it into the beam and leaves him hanging there.
I like that. I actually enjoyed that. Right? Like I said, there are those moments there where it's like, okay, that's, I'd keep that. I like the hook and the post.
Well, my changes. I'm like, my hook doesn't have a hook, but well, his name has a different connotation.
I'll be interested to hear that. I cast for malevolence.
Yeah, well, I mean, I certainly have that. It's just in a different way. Constantine Gregory was Mr. Parker. He's been in lots of cool stuff. A couple of Bond movies. One is GoldenEye. He was also in The Sum of All Fears. Yeah. He seems to like these spy type of movies.
Well, he had the most even performance throughout the movie.
Yeah, he was really good, wasn't he?
He was really good.
I struggled with him because I kind of wanted to keep that character, but in the end, I had to change it.
My casting came so easy for that one. Actually, most of my casting came really easy except for my Hasegawa character. Mm-hmm. That was one where I struggled with because I had somebody in mind. And I'm like, well, no, I don't want to do that because I think I've used him before. So I waffled on it.
I did the same thing.
Yeah. Right. And I don't know if I've used the guy I went with before or not, but I'm going with him anyhow. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was by far the most even character. And I think that the only thing that I didn't like about that character is I wanted him to be like the boss you fight before the big boss in a video game.
Yeah, he's the underboss. Yeah. So, you know, if you're thinking Italian mob-wise. But yeah, he's the second final boss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was originally thinking about it, like I wanted to cast him as being, like, cast somebody who's good at going to give our hero a bit of a fight. Mm-hmm. In the end, I didn't really go that way, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, you think they're going to set up Venerius as the boss fight, and that guy just goes down like a pussy. And the real boss fight is Hasegawa.
Yeah, which is ultimately the fight you want to see.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Certainly, the fight itself was pretty anticlimactic, but yeah, that's the fight that everybody wanted to see, was that final battle.
For sure. Right? Dale Ishimoto was Kimari. He's been around a long time. We saw him in Beverly Hills Ninja more recently, but he goes back to like the old Twilight Zone as well. So it was a long, you know, I don't think I ever heard his name spoken in the movie, but I bet you that was the old master.
Yes.
Yeah. Juni Gamboa was Mr. Masudo. Leo Martinez was Pee-wee. Didn't cast him either, but he was kind of the leader of the...
He's the lead hand for Frank's plantation, yeah.
Yeah, and Ken Matcalf was Elliot. So there's your cast. Not a lot of crossover with our older stuff, but...
No, just the one that I could find, plus, of course, Menahem Golan, sorry, being related to the production company that's produced some of the movies that are definitely ripe for remake. I'm guaranteeing you there will be more canon films showing up in our catalog here, because there are so many of the movies that had some potential that really got wasted.
Yeah, for sure. But now it's time to catch you up. Let's go to the trailer for Enter the Ninja.
Ninja. first martial art to sweep the modern world was jiu-jitsu, closely followed by the discipline of karate. Then we were taught to combine the spiritual with the physical by the masters of kung fu. And now, the Canon Group is proud to introduce the practitioner of the oldest and ultimate martial art, the ninja. Enter the ninja.
This goal is your license as a master of ninjutsu.
Starring Franco Nero, exploding into action as Cole, the white ninja.
Give him a message for me.
Yeah.
I don't like to be followed.
I love it here. It's become my home. And nobody, nobody is going to drive us away.
Susan George is the proud and beautiful Marianne, a strong-willed woman who knows what she wants and just how to get it. And introducing Sho Kosugi.
Kampai!
Kampai!
Kampai.
Hasegawa, the black ninja, born of samurai blood, is unable to accept anything but the ancient ways.
You did not drink, Hasegawa.
He is no ninja.
It's an iron code. They want to take it away from us.
Bitter and merciless, this rogue ninja will stop at nothing to destroy any and all who cross his path. Ninja. Hired assassins, trained killers, masters of the most deadly art known to man. If you take on a ninja, no matter how many you are, be prepared for the consequences. Enter the ninja from Canon.
Enter the ninja. Even the name was trying to...
evoked Bruce Lee and Enter the Dragon.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. And I think that's when I was watching it, and I sort of remaking it as I was watching it, one of the things that sort of popped into my head is I wanted more of that Enter the Dragon kind of feel to it, to be honest with you, where he's working his way through a series of bosses, right? And that's kind of led into that whole thought about the Mr. Parker character being more proficient and being a proficient martial artist as well, right? Was sort of to evoke that.
Interesting that you might say that.
Yeah, I had this feeling that you might be thinking the same thing, but yeah, like this, there's so much setup and so little payoff in this movie.
Now, you brought it up while the trailers were playing, but we have to bring up the insane sound effects in this
and
movie.
Music. Don't forget the music.
The music is pretty something, but the sound effects just, wow, maybe they were trying to be a cartoon. Maybe they were trying to be funny. I don't know.
It's hard to see because, yeah, the sound effects are over the top.
Like, oh, yeah.
They are way over the top. Like, you can hear the darts flying through the air. And
yeah. I mean, you have to YouTube this to really appreciate it. You just heard the audio for it, but when you can see what's going on with that audio and realizing, oh, that was a falling sound.
Yes.
Or a swoosh in the air. I'm like, they are so over the top. I mean, there's spring and things like that.
There are, yeah. I mean, there's even this great moment, and we already talked about the Hook getting his hand torn off by our Cole character. Mm-hmm. As he's running away, Cole throws the Hook back at him, and then there is literally the trumpet, wah, 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 music piece right after that. I'm like, it didn't fit.
No.
At all. But it did make it funny.
Yeah, which is probably the point, but that is some, well, that's pulling from some classics. kind of bits.
Yeah, it is. But it's something
pulling from the 40s.
From the 40s and from 40s comedies, not something... Yeah. Like, this is a movie with a huge identity crisis.
Yeah, this is an R-rated action movie.
Yes. Not a PG-13 or a G-rated comedy, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, there's just so much that doesn't fit. And I really like making that trumpet noise.
You do it well. You do it well. Wah, wah, wah. And that might be how you feel at the end of the movie, too.
Actually, there was a bit of an elation when I finished watching. I was like, oh, thank God it's over.
I was, too. I'm like, ah, oh, damn. We just torture ourselves with our childhood memories sometimes.
Yes, and anybody who's hating on us for not liking this movie, please go back and watch it again before you hate on us. Because... we love this movie, and we were both really excited to do it.
Yes.
When we went into this whole process, it was after this recent rewatch that we have gone, what the fuck were we thinking?
Well, keep in mind, I don't pick great movies. I pick movies that I think we can have some fun with and remake and rethink about.
Yeah.
So I knew this was going to have its faults, but wow, this was a lot worse than I thought it was.
You know, and we recently watched some really... great movies, and we watched some really bad ones. I mean, when go back to Sorceress, which was another disaster of a film that was a lot of fun to watch,
mm-hmm.
right? This one was a disaster film that wasn't as much fun to watch as I was hoping,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, it had its moments, don't get me wrong.
Oh, trust me, when I was reacting to this movie, it probably wasn't the reaction they were hoping for.
No, I don't think at any point did I react the way they were hoping I would react, except for when Dollar was on the screen.
Yeah. So I think I've already kind of done the plot here. We have that training thing at the beginning or the graduation day.
Yeah.
And then he goes to see his friend Frank, who has this plantation and a problem with Venarius.
Exactly. And he's having trouble keeping laborers because of Venarius.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And that's established fairly well. That's actually one of the other things that is established fairly well is the problem that Frank's having.
Yes. So with Cole kind of sticking around, he kind of... gets his nose in there and helps defend people. He kind of just stands back and watches like a ninja would, you know, just assesses the situation before he gets involved. But then he starts playing with people.
Yes.
Which is kind of amusing. There's this over-the-top cockiness to him.
There certainly is, yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's a deserved cockiness, but it's also out of his training, as he's lacking the subtlety that you would normally expect from mm-hmm. somebody with that kind of training.
Yeah, and this is, I think, comes from him being an American, Texan.
Yes, right. And I think that actually, you could have that play that up a little bit. I said, I have some ideas about how to explain how he becomes trained to be a ninja. Completely rejig that opening scene to set up the conflict between him and Hasegawa as well.
I think that opening scene should be he's already ninja.
Yes.
He's on a mission. He's on a mission, and I've got all sorts of complicated things in my brain about this, but he's on a mission, and he's not a traditional ninja. You know, he's learned the ways of the ninja and has incorporated modern military technology into his outfit as well.
We're on the same page there.
Okay, so he's got some armor and things like that. White outfit's gone. I want to go with the more... military style fatigue colors on a somewhat traditional ninja outfit.
I'm liking that. I can buy into that.
And yeah. Under like a lot of the bladed stuff, he'd have all those gizmos and fun little ninja things, but he'd have a modern twist on quite a few of them, and he certainly would be carrying modern weaponry as well. He certainly wouldn't discount like guns and things as well. He's not growing up in this spiritual world of theirs. In my mind, and I'm trying to figure out where the training had come from, and I like the flashbacks to happen periodically during the movie.
Well, I had an idea about that, because there's a scene where they're in Angola, right, mm-hmm. which is where the war that he and Frank fought in.
Mm-hmm.
He had gotten shot, so I want to sort of take that piece and have him get shot and Frank having to leave him, mm-hmm. and he gets found by our ninja master who sees something in him and says, kind of the Remo Williams thing. Right.
Yeah, sees the strength to live. But in my mind, with the training and stuff, like, yes, he's bringing him in, he's training him, but there is a resistance as well, because sharing this with an outsider is a no-no. And, yeah, we're going to train you. I'm not going to teach you everything I know.
Yeah. No, and that, I like that part of it. And I also see that as the opportunity to create a break there between Hasegawa and his master.
Mm-hmm.
And... in that opening scene, you can still have the fight scene.
It helps create that tension between the two.
Exactly. And then you can also have that fight scene in the beginning where Cole's on his mission and Hasegawa shows up with his own sort of group of ninjas. Mm-hmm. You still get that fight scene, but now it's you already established that they're in direct conflict.
Yeah, after leaving the school when they've ventured off into their world of assassination.
Exactly. And then he can go back to the master and say, I saw Hasegawa, right? Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to complete my mission because Hasegawa interfered.
Yeah. Well, to me, in my mind, I thought once he left the school, he would be back to being military. Yeah. But, you know, strictly black ops. I still want Frank in the military. I was thinking, I want all this to happen in Japan.
That can work for me.
Yeah. Right. Venerius, not being a land guy, I would bring him in more as Russian mob.
You know what? If you're going to Japan, why not go make it like a corporate espionage kind of thing?
Yeah, and I was thinking about it. And Mr. Parker becomes Mr. Park and doesn't work for Venerius. He's
monitoring Mr. Venerius?
No, he's Yakuza.
Okay.
Like, he's rivals. Maybe it's a friendly rivalry where they're trying something, a union of sorts between these two facets.
Especially
with maybe the Russians coming in with their stuff and kind of tromping on a different crime family's grounds. There's a tenuous agreement here so they don't go to war.
Yeah, I can see.
Or that, or we could just have them. It's a three-way battle here, and then it's Frank and Cole caught in the middle of it.
I can kind of see that working. I'm always worried about Russian mob because they've become sort of the go-to bad guy lately. Mm. That's my only thing. I do like the idea of him being a legitimate businessman, right? But he has questionable methods for obtaining the things he wants.
And thus the partnership with the Yakuza would make a little more sense.
That completely fucks up my casting for Mr. Parker, but that's okay.
That's okay. I mean, we didn't cast with this kind of talk in mind. So.
No, but I like that idea, whereas, he's in bed with the Yakuza, right? And he has to be in order to do business in Japan. Right?
Yeah, so I would think Mr. Parker becomes Mr. Park, if you cast it that way. Yeah. It bugged me in the original film that they just come up with this idea, oh, this dude's a ninja, let's get one of our own.
Yeah.
And hey, there's a training film, where the fuck did we get that?
Yeah.
Like, what is this? Like, it's not like we had the dark web yet in 81, so where were you getting this shit?
Well, that's funny, because there's some great cheesy dialogue from Venarius at the end of the movie. Where's my ninja? Where's my black ninja? I want my ninja.
It's like he's a G.I. Joe.
Yes.
In a lot of ways, this is Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow.
Yes, in a lot of ways, yeah. And you know, it wouldn't surprise me if there was a certain amount of inspiration from these films for at least the Storm Shadow character. Mm. Although Snake Eyes wears black and is a good guy, and Storm Shadow wears white and is a bad guy.
Yeah.
But
it still is the
same dichotomy, yeah.
Same dichotomy, yeah. The outsider coming in and training with the clan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if because this movie came out just before G.I. Joe sort of really popped as a toy and cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And Storm Shadow didn't exist in those early iterations of G.I. Joe either.
No, not in the 60s stuff at all. No. It was just strictly a military toy line.
Yeah, and even in the 80s stuff, that first sort of run of toys didn't have the Storm Shadow. Storm Shadow was later in the...
Shadow was much later, Just to have kind of the opposite of Snake Eyes for Cobra. But now we're geeking out over toys.
Yes. But there are a generation of toys, so of course we are.
Yeah, hell yeah. But, you know, now we're seeing where we're going, and I like that this is starting to eliminate the whole land grab stuff. It does bug me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I still like the idea of Frank and Marianne being part of it.
I still like Frank could be still a military buddy. There's plenty of U.S. military bases in Japan.
Yeah.
So they could be expats living in Japan.
But yeah, and then we have to figure out how we're going to get them sort of connected and how we're going to get them connected into the story.
Dollars.
Mm-hmm. So he's feeding information to the American military.
He is that middle guy. He's feeding everybody.
Yeah.
If you got the cash, you got the dollars.
Yeah.
I got the information. Yeah. I got what you need. He's a little more of an underhanded character, but still with a good heart.
Still brings the humor to it. I like it.
Keep in mind, like, Cole's strictly Wetworks Black Ops spy guy.
Yeah.
You know, Frank's not going to really know about that stuff.
No, he's
military. Sure. Yeah. He's there, based in just a buddy.
Yeah, Right. Yeah, he doesn't know that that Cole's moved on from being the grunt that that they both were.
Yeah, and as you said, you know, we can establish something in the military. This is why he's resurfaced. Frank didn't even know he was alive.
And that's where you can sort of have it back.
This drama and maybe tension between those two characters, and ultimately, hopefully, a reconciliation.
I like that. I like that work. That works really well because he's been gone been missing for 5-10 years or whatever it is, and then he just walks back onto the base, right? And they're going, well, we had you listed as DOA. He says, yeah, no, I was rescued, but he comes up with some elaborate lie saying like, I didn't know who or what I was until recently, right? Like it's tropey.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with the odd trope in a movie, right?
We don't actually have to go into the military base. Not all military personnel live on the base. Yeah. So we can maybe not push into that as much where the military... I mean, he could already been working back for the U.S. without Frank ever knowing this.
I suppose, yeah. But at the same time, if he's receiving this training, that's going to take some time, right?
So, No,
his time missing has to be explained somehow.
I would figure this... Like when these two served together was probably 20 years prior.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to take
at least that amount of time for him to heal and train.
Yeah. Minimum. So you're going to have to set up, like, he has to have a story for Frank, right? Yeah. Like, if nothing else, he has to have a story for Frank.
Yeah.
Explaining why, he's all of a sudden back when Frank thought he was dead.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Right.
And it could be something as simple as, I was rescued and I've been in training and I've been out doing missions, but now they've stationed me here and I'm really happy to see you kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And, this is my wife. She's also a sergeant at the base, make her capable as well, because I hated that she was just a damsel in distress
And the funny thing is they set up to not be, because she's always the one grabbing the shotgun trying to do stuff.
That's true. They actually do show her very capable, and then when shit goes down, she just forgets that she's a badass.
Yeah. Exactly, yes.
Yeah. I thought they did a very good job actually setting her up as the one that wears the pants. Like, this works really well with our version of the story, where Frank's really tortured by his past, and he's still kind of the same type of character, really.
To a certain extent, yeah. I think I want him to be more capable than he was in the...
Oh, for sure. Like, he hasn't forgotten his training. He's still very capable.
But he's still suffering PTSD from what happened with Cole, like what happened 20 years ago, is still weighing him.
And I think that's something that really did bug me about this movie. They do talk about it a little bit in the movie, where he's like, oh, I used to be really good at this stuff, and he wasn't getting involved in fights and he was avoiding conflict and really got his ass handed to him most of the time.
He did, yeah.
And you'd think this guy's a little more capable.
For sure. And you would want him to be being ex-military, even though he's a bit of a drunk. Mm-hmm. Right? You might even want to take the drinking out of it. I don't think it's a necessary plot device, but I think that the guilt, he's continues to feel guilt over having left Cole in the jungle, because you don't leave somebody behind.
Yeah.
But that's where Cole kind of comes and helps him with his healing, is like, no, I did what you had to do and I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Right. As it turns out, I made it out. And that could take away the guilt of leaving behind, but at the same time, it also makes Frank feel worse in a way, because he's like, well, he didn't even fucking need me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He got out on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you have now a bit of an anger towards Cole. I think that could play really interesting later on.
And that could be very interesting, because that could replace the whole you slept with my wife, passive aggressive bullshit.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I was thinking about. If you sort of have that guilt turn into anger, right. That you let me think you were dead for 20 years. You didn't even need me to get you out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What kind of fucking friend are you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when it comes down to the problems with Venarius, these two, Marianne and Frank, can use some of their military background and connections to get them into certain places. I think that would serve the story fairly well.
Well, what if they're not at military per se?
Well, they could be ex-military.
Ex-military working for a different agency of the government. They're investigating Venarius because Venarius has questionable means of
that
doing
could
business.
Be where they why they're stationed there.
Yeah, that would make more sense.
Yeah,
right. So
and Marianne's doing the heavy lifting because Frank's still kind of buggered.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's still capable of the physical stuff, but he's not very good at the strategic stuff, and that's what she's really good at.
Yeah,
right. And I cast that way. I actually cast deliberately that. Right? Okay. You're either going to hate or love my
Marianne. Oh, this plays more to the spy stuff. My Marianne's me. I'm on the fence. She's been in some action stuff, so this might work still. But okay, I'm digging this. I'm digging how that's structured. And now I would think it would be our Yakuza, Mr. Park. Which Mr. Parker in the original film is the one that comes up with the ninja stuff, but at least if he's Japanese, he might have actual connections. I know this clan. Or maybe he's even been training as well.
Possibly, yeah. Or yeah, he's a failed student,
He's a failed student.
Yeah, which gives him some capability.
Although you'd figure failed students would just be killed, but...
Yeah, or he was recruited, but in the end decided not to proceed with training. Like, he didn't really fail.
He didn't have the mindset for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he was too aggressive.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, yeah, I like that, where that's going.
Mm-hmm.
I like where that's going very much, actually.
Now, I also cast Mr. Hook in a different way and with thinking a different thought. The Hook.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, it's not just, I didn't want it to be a physical manifestation. Oh, he's called the Hook because he's got a hook. Get it? Yeah. He's got a hook.
Well,
he's the Hook.
And the funny thing is, in IMDb, they call him the Hook. Mm-hmm. He actually has a name. His actual name is Siegfried.
Yes. Right. That's just the nickname everybody's given him. But I was thinking he's more capable. Like, he's still the guy on the ground. He's still the kind of the guy that runs the thugs. He's not a higher up, but he's kind of the higher up of the lower hierarchy within the crime family.
Yeah, he's the guy on the ground for Venarius.
Yeah, yeah. But he's also, like, he's really smart. He's always got an angle. He's like, to go back to another 80s thing, he's Starscream to Megatron.
Yes.
Like, he's actually a little, because now our Mr. Park is actually Yakuza, not really working for Venarius, but allied with.
Yeah.
So that makes, we need the Hook to be higher up. This guy's smart. He's always got an angle and working it out for himself, how he's going to come out on top of this.
Yeah, and I mean, he's going to be the first point of contact for our three heroes. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he still needs to be the sort of that one who keeps running into problems with them.
Yeah,
right? And
instead of having to go to somebody, he can think around it and and maybe we can have Frank being swayed a little bit.
That, which would
playing to his guilt
and then later on the anger.
You know, he betrayed a friend and he realized he did something really, really bad and really wrong here, and he made a terrible, terrible mistake based on his anger.
Yeah, and then you can have that final moment of redemption before you kill him.
Yes, which is a great device.
Yeah, I'm liking where that's going. And so I can see how
I don't want a hook.
No, we can or not.
Yeah. The Hook has the Hook all the time. He's either the Hook up or has an angle.
He's checking all sort of the gray area operations for Venarius, right? And that's what his role is. And you can have, he's aware of Frank and Marianne.
Mm-hmm. I have
Gilligan's Island there, by the way.
This really smart guy who came up from a sketchy background into a very powerful position.
You're going to love my casting for him then.
I think you will too.
Yeah. He's aware of them, though, as being something that he has to be addressing somehow, right? Because he knows that they're watching Venarius. Like, he knows because they've meshed with some of the operations, right? So he is actively trying to eliminate them somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sending people after them, and because you need that sort of, just to create some action in our first act and a half, you need some of that stuff mm-hmm. there and show that they're capable fighters in their own right.
Yeah, so like, you know, if we got some of the Yakuza with Venarius mixed with his men, we've got gunplay and actual martial arts, not ninjutsu martial arts, but good martial artists. Yeah. You know, we're talking some early stuff that's going to be more John Wick-ish.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you're dealing with a ninja, there's going to be a lot of pegging you off before you ever see him.
Like they do in that one great scene at the house there,
mm-hmm.
right, where he goes out and he takes out 16 guys That was another funny line.
How the fuck did he sneak up the stairs in a white ninja outfit while everybody's at the pool?
Oh, that bothered the heck out of me. No, there's the scene where they're at that stone castle thing.
Right.
That was actually really well done in the sense that he was sort of picking them off one by one, and when he snaps his fingers, from all come out, only six come out instead of the 20 they were expecting.
Yeah.
It's like, well, where's the other 14?
Yeah.
That was good.
That was good. Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that was a great moment for a boss battle.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious that he's like, oh, here's your guns back.
Yeah, I love that. I don't know about that.
I would have probably just dropped them at my feet. Or I would have started planting them around the place, going, all right, you know, those are the guys I couldn't get at. I'm going to, when I get over here, there'll be a gun. When I get over here, there'll be a gun.
Yeah, and I'm not so sure about his
I wouldn't have the reliance on it, but...
But he's willing to use it if...
That's where you can have, hey... Marianne, you go that way. There's a gun over there. You know, like they've laid this plan this out already. He's been here.
Yeah, I like that. He
doesn't need it. He's doing it for his allies who are there with him.
Because I mean, he does give Dollar a gun in that scene there as well, right? So yeah, that would just sort of expand upon that a lot better, right? Yeah. And I don't think Dollar needs to be in that scene, right? I think that's a scene where you'd have maybe Frank and Marianne.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Dollar's the one that grants them access to this place or whatever. Like, well, he's
the messenger, right?
Yeah, he's in a lot of ways, Dollar is the go-between everybody.
Yeah, and I don't see him being actively involved in the situation like that because it
doesn't fit his character.
It doesn't fit his character, especially the way that we're planning on using him.
Yeah, it didn't fit his character in the original movie.
Not really, no. So... Yeah, I like that idea. But yeah, you have Frank and Marianne as his backup rather than Dollar. Mm-hmm. So you still sort of keep that element.
Yeah. Right. You know, that means Frank dies a lot later, but he makes it to the end of the movie and he can die fixing his mistakes.
That's right. And you can still have that motivation where you have Marianne being the one captured, right? But now it's Frank who's motivated to get her back, whereas Cole's just trying to end it, right? Because our ninja character doesn't need... that type of motivation.
Yeah, I mean, Hasegawa was being brought in by... Yeah.
And that is his motivation.
Yeah, right? By Mr. Park, just like it was before, but this is... flips back around to that first mission that was unsuccessful because of the middle ground. I think it's... In the original movie, I thought it was really weird that, like, is this the only ninja outfit? Like, ninjas are us.
Yeah.
Come here.
Well, and that's where I got my idea.
There are other clans.
Hasegawa has split off to create his own
clan. Yeah.
His own clan, yes.
Yes.
Right. Because he doesn't like the fact that this white person was brought in to be trained by his master.
Yeah.
Or is being trained anything by his master.
No, that stuff I loved. I'm like, you need to expand on this. You need to do more with this.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that could work really well. And then all you need is Cole knowing that Hasegawa has been hired to take him out, right? And he finds that out when Marianne gets taken.
I mean, Hasegawa is in his thorn in his side right at the beginning.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. You don't need any further motivation for him to go after Venarius and his organization.
I think as far as Hasegawa was concerned, he's just trying to erase an embarrassment to the clan he was from.
Yes, yeah. And somebody who's stepping on his figurative and literal toes, because he's taking work away from Hasegawa as well.
Yeah,
yeah, I think that could work really well. And you give both characters a lot more motivation.
Oh yeah, and there's a lot more meat on the bones and a lot more emotional territory to travel for everybody.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the only one we haven't really fleshed out is Marianne.
Yeah,
and even her we have. She's now got a purpose. She's even though she might be ranked lower than her husband, you're right. She's the one who sort of has all of her shit together, and she's the competent one. She loves her husband to death, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have established that there's no conflict in their marriage. Their conflict is professional, right? Whenever she gets pissed off at him, is because of his professional behavior, not the way he treats her, or his neglect of her in their relationship.
Yeah. Right. Have we defined Venarius enough here, you think?
He is your scene-stealing bad guy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he was in this movie. I think that, yeah, I mean, they tried to make him really malevolent and really weird.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you could take away the weirdness, but make him...
You can do quirky, but not like cartoon quirky.
Yeah, and I cast to quirky.
I did. I tried to make him menacing in his own right, but
I did, and in my casting, it works really well for menacing. But yeah, I think that he's
He should be able to rock a suit and look mean in it.
Yeah, and he's organized. He knows what's going on because I mean he had his finger on the pulse of what was going on, and he was very much in control of his situation until the end. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until the end where he gets all like, I want my ninja, right? Like a petulant child.
Yeah.
Right? I think that that final scene, I think that you could have him going, okay, where is the ninja?
Mm-hmm.
We're at the end game here, and we still don't have our secret weapon.
Yeah.
Right. And that could be a bit of a dialogue between Park saying, you need to go get him.
Yeah. At least with Asagawa, when he torches Frank's place and the village huts and things like that, that felt more like a ninja thing to do. Like that, one of the big weapons for a ninja is arson.
Yes. And I mean, his maniacal glee as he was doing it was a little over the top.
Yeah, that was just cartoon bullshit.
Yeah. but yes, because I was thinking the same thing as I was wondering, that's very ninja.
Yeah.
But it would have been stealth. He would have been sneaking around, setting fire. You wouldn't even have seen him. Yeah.
The fires would have just been starting. People would have been trying to put them out.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
If he hadn't have killed them while they were sleeping.
Exactly. I would like to see something like that somewhere in our thing. I don't know. Who'd be burning down though? Because we've completely taken that out of play.
Yeah, we don't technically need that anymore, unless. Maybe he's brought in at this point. Cole has already been a bit of a thorn in their side, and he's learned of a weapons cache,
or a
military outpost or something that they're using to armor up, and he gets to it first.
That's one thought. I had another one. What if, what if after some conflicts with Siegfried and those troops, the guy is like, okay, well, your safe house isn't safe anymore. I have a place we can go. He goes back to where he's trained, and that's where Hasegawa comes.
Mm. Right?
And he burns down the school.
Oh. And lays waste to her. Because
he just kidnaps Marianne waste to the school.
And we see that ending of the original movie where Cole does return to the school and it's burnt and laid to waste.
Yes.
This explains that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what prompted it, actually.
Yeah, no, that's good. I hadn't figured that part out, but that's great because we've got all the major kind of beats that the original film has, but we've gone in a different direction with it. And
we made it very modern.
Yeah.
And we set ourselves up for some really fucking fabulous action throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, right from the very first scene where you could have a really amazing battle between Hasegawa and Cole and the magical reappearing ninjas that Hasegawa seems to have. Because when you first saw the movie, it's like there were only two red ninjas. Then there's four. Then there's six.
Yeah.
And then there's ten. It's like they just kept multiplying.
Yeah.
They just never ended. Right. And I would have a lot more of this stuff happening in the dark.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, lit dark for movie purposes. But yeah, a lot of this movie took place in the daylight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you could have a lot more fun sort of fight scenes that aren't all Cole.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think that Frank and Marianne cause problems for Siegfried before Cole ever even comes on scene. I think that's where you introduce them after the opening credits, after the opening fight scene, and then you do opening credits. And then the next scene is Frank and Marianne beating up some of Siegfried's henchmen.
Yeah, I mean, this should all tie back to that first failed part of the mission that we see. I mean, and during this whole movie, we'll see flashbacks back to the training, back to the school.
Yeah.
To fill in the story, that back matter. But maybe Cole first spots Frank and Marianne during that mission. Like, we already established they're there to investigate Venarius.
Yes, but certainly you could have maybe even those ninjas already working for Venarius.
Mm-hmm.
That's an idea. I like that.
This could have been a Yakuza outpost that we can set up that relationship between them in that scene. So they're there to investigate Venarius and his shady dealings, not knowing there's a bunch of Yakuza shit going on that Cole is involved with at the beginning action scene.
You could, and you know how Cole reappears? Mm-hmm. Is he sitting in their safe house when they come back from this fight?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and then you could have like,
hey guys.
Yeah. Yeah, and he can even say, you know what, you guys don't know what you're messing with.
Yeah. And right. You do, you're supposed to be dead.
Yeah, and you can have this great bit of dialogue, and he's just saying, I can't tell you what I do,
right?
But you're stepping into some really dark, dangerous territory, and you need to back off, mm-hmm. right? And then you can get into the professionalism of these two saying, well, we can't. This is our job. This is what we do, right? And then they sort of really develop that partnership. Mm-hmm. And then you can sort of see the relationship between Frank and Cole redeveloping mm-hmm. through their new partnership in both sort of working towards the same goal of taking out Venarius, mm-hmm. right? And, oh, Venarius is his original target. Mm. At the very beginning, Venarius is the target at the very beginning.
It'd make sense as being a target.
Yeah, because a rival Yakuza family, because there's more than one, mm-hmm. right, has decided that they're not comfortable with the relationship that this other family has with them. Mm-hmm. Right? And then everything ties together, right? It all has a purpose, and it mm-hmm. doesn't seem as random.
Yeah, no, I like that.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking that works really well, is that Venarius is a target right from the get-go.
Yeah, cool. All right, I think we got a movie.
I think we might be on the right track here. I'm actually liking the way this came out.
Yeah, I'm feeling really good about this one.
Now I want to see it.
I know. Who's got all the canon library that can develop this? I hope you're listening to the show.
Heck yeah. We changed it enough, you probably don't even need the canon permission anymore. Change the names, and you have a brand new movie.
If I were bankrupt, somebody else has got it.
Yeah, so I'm sure somebody else has got it, yeah. But yeah, you wouldn't be able to call it. Yeah, if you don't get the rights, you could be pushing your luck calling it Enter the Ninja again, yeah. I guess, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and that last bit, that was one of the things because we were talking about the correlation between Enter the Dragon and Enter the Ninja, mm-hmm. is you could easily, like, I want to see boss fights. Right.
Yeah, I mean, this gun still was kind of set up that way, but yeah, I totally want boss fights. Like, I'm in for that. You know, you taken down with the thugs, and here's a guy that looks like he's got a little more skill, and it's going to be a bit more of a challenge.
Yeah, because I mean,
you're a ninja for the most part. You're going to be quietly taking out a lot of these guys.
Exactly. Yeah, and you want to see more of that, like more of the sort of the stealth aspect of the whole ninja mm. culture. But yeah, like the scene in the fortress, I'm going to call it, where Mr. Park has another henchman with him, mm-hmm. right? That henchman should be somebody who fights Cole, loses mm-hmm. badly, but still fights Cole.
Yeah.
Right? Allowing Park to escape.
Oh yeah. I mean, you got to get your main bad guys to closer to the end of the movie. Yeah. So.
Yeah. But yes, more of those, right? Certainly lots of those fights where they take out lots of henchmen, right? Because those are always fun to watch.
Yeah.
But you also want those really great, elaborate one-on-one battles.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And you can play that up a little bit. I mean, that was the one great thing about that one Indiana Jones scene. Like, oh, this is going to be a great fight. Just takes out his gun and shoots the fucker.
Yeah.
You know? Subverting expectations sometimes nice. So you set it up, boss fight. You set it up, boss fight. Fuck it, I'm not doing this again.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know
ninja
what?
Star to the eye.
Yeah, and you could have. I mean, and that one maybe could be like maybe it's one of those things where he just sort of stands there and waits, and Frank blows his head off
mm-hmm.
from the wall or something like that.
Yeah,
which throws back to the original movie too, because Dollar does fire the gun into the. Yeah.
You're still a cowboy, Cole.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You could have again some of that fun icebreaker comedy, right? Mm-hmm. That fits the movie and subverting expectations.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I don't want to take the fun out of the movie. Yeah. I mean, there is fun in the original film and sometimes unintentionally funny. Yeah.
Yes.
But my director that I've got here certainly fits the bill for action and comedy.
As does mine.
Which is great. We're going to get to that, but first, we got a great deal for you on tickets. Go to seatgiant.ca and seatgiant.com and check out all the crazy stuff they've got there from NHL, NFL, MLB, NBA, other letters you might know. And of course, rock bands and your favorite pop stars, rap stars. All these tickets are available over at seatgiant.com and .ca.
Broadway on tour.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, like a theater. Yeah, there's so much stuff in there.
For sure. So go check out seatgiant.ca and seatgiant.com. And if something you like and you're grabbing some tickets, they're already nice, cheap tickets, best game in town. But if you use our code INVASION at checkout, you can get an extra discount on your purchases. So again, that is INVASION at checkout. Use that promo code INVASION and you'll get some great entertainment, and some of it's on us. Enjoy seatgiant.com.ca. They're a game changer. Okay, let's get to some recasting. I'm excited.
You know, I am too. I like I said, my cast came together really well for me. The only one that doesn't work for me still is my Mr. Parker, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you probably have a good Mr. Parker anyhow. So we'll...
Yeah, well, technically, it's Miss Park.
Miss Park, even better.
Yeah. Yeah,
even better.
Because... I didn't think there was enough females in this. And then now we got somebody for Marianne to punch in the face.
I'm liking that.
Yeah.
I'm liking that. So I'll go first because I want to hear what you do with Mr. Park.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. So Enter the Dragon. Enter the Ninja.
Enter the Dragon Ninja? Ninja Dragon?
Ninja Dragon, yes. Okay. So I'll start with my Cole. My Cole, I'm with Ray Park.
Okay.
If you want to talk to somebody who can do like the physical acrobatic part of it, mm-hmm. And the martial arts part of it, and the swordplay of it, I'm like, he's a gimme.
The one caveat I have there, he's not a very good actor.
Neither was Nero.
No. Yeah, well, definitely better than Nero.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was a little concerned about that, but I'm like, yeah we can minimize his dialogue a little bit. For my Hasegawa, I'm guessing this is probably who you thought I was going to go with. I went with Daniel Wu from Into the Badlands.
Mm-hmm. That's who I thought you were going to. Yeah. I was going to as well, and I'm like, no, too obvious. We both go to that
and
one.
He wasn't my. He was my first choice. Then he wasn't. Then I went back to him because I moved my first choice to a different role.
Okay. Okay?
For my Marianne, I went with Ruth Negga.
Okay.
From Preacher and a bunch of other stuff. Because she plays that badass really, really well.
I'll take your word for it. I've never liked her in anything I've seen her in. but. I think she's wonderful. It's just I'm not entertained by her.
I
don't like her on I didn't like her on S.H.I.E.L.D. I didn't like her in Warhammer, and I don't like her on Preacher.
I don't think she was the right casting for Preacher, but no. I like the way she plays the character.
Fair enough. Yeah. You know what? I wasn't a fan of the Preacher show, but out of all those roles, I did think that was her best one.
Yes.
There you go.
There we go. So from Avenarius, I went with Willem Dafoe.
Okay.
Right? Because while I was watching it, I'm like, this guy reminds me of somebody. This guy reminds me of somebody. I'm like, holy shit, Willem Dafoe. And you want to talk to somebody who brings malice and menace to a bad guy character? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's pretty darn good at that. Mm-hmm. For my Frank Landers, I originally cast this actor as my Hasegawa, but now instead he's my Frank. It's Ernie Reyes. Young martial arts actor, you're run down.
Oh, okay.
So he's actually is a martial artist.
Yeah.
Right. And he's Filipino. And I'm thinking, mm-hmm. well, even if we don't set in the Philippines, I now have a Filipino character to tie it back to the Philippines.
Fair.
I mean, he's a fun actor. And he, like I said, he's very physically capable.
Mm-hmm.
For my Mr. Parker, because the actor who played him in the original reminded me so much of this actor, I just went with Jude Law.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. That sort of, I could see Jude Law playing that type of character.
He definitely reminded me of a bunch of different actors, and I'm like, I can't put my finger on this one.
Yeah, but yeah, for me it was Jude Law.
Yeah, right? And then I just changed the character entirely.
Yeah.
So
yeah, which makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
And then for my Siegfried / the Hook, I went Jackie Earle Haley.
I like that.
I thought you might.
Yeah.
I think he'd be great, especially if you want somebody who's sort of competent and just a little on the evil side.
Certainly has that weaselness about him.
Yes. I was actually thinking of him in Human Target specifically. Yeah. I'm like, I want to see him play a variation of that character.
Right.
And that plays really well into your Hook theory, right? Like, that he's got a sort of really competent at what he does.
Yeah.
And then for my director, I went with Corey Ewan, who directed The Transporter, the first Transporter movie.
Cool.
And a bunch of other stuff. But yeah, he was good at that sort of physical action comedy type stuff.
Yeah. I like it. I like it a lot. Okay. For my director, I'll start with that. One, somebody who could balance action and comedy, and if it wanted to go a little more spoofy, could certainly lean into it, and if he didn't, he's certainly good at that too. And he could probably play somebody in this movie. It is Stephen Chow from Kung Fu Hustle, and God of Cookery, we talked about him.
I can see that. Yeah,
yeah. I wanted an Asian director, and
I went Asian as well.
Yeah, but. So I'm not sure how his English is to direct an English cast, but it's okay. I mean, he can certainly direct a movie for sure. His movies always entertain me. Okay, for my Cole, I went with Tom Hardy.
Okay.
Yeah, a versatile actor and oftentimes a chameleon himself, so he can play diverse roles, and I'm sure he would go out of his way to learn to do the choreography well.
There's definitely that, for sure.
for Hasegawa. Still into the Badlands, but he was also in Pandorum and Tekken. He is Kung Lee. He's also an actor in Into the Badlands. So
yes.
Thought he would work out really well for my Mariana with Rose Leslie. She's an English actress. It's been in Luther, Downton Abbey, and The Last Witch Hunter in Game of Thrones as well. I think she's available now.
she was only in the first season. Maybe
I don't. I've only ever seen the first episode. And after all you guys who watched the last episode, you're probably thinking I'm the lucky one. But I'm really liking how that long storyline developed, even though I wasn't really following it, that finally paid off in the last season between the coffee cup and the water bottle.
Yes.
It was dazzling. So good. So good. Okay, for my now Miss Park, I went with Jamie Chung. We've used her before. She does a lot of TV stuff. And it's blanking on in my brain, but she's been in lots of cool things. I think she's even been into the Badlands at one point.
That wouldn't surprise me. I have a pretty diverse casting.
She was in that not Iron Fist TV show, the Man with the Iron Fist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was, and I think Kung Lee was in there as well. That's where some of my cast came from. For my Frank, he now inherits the mighty mustache of Frank Nero. I went with Clayne Crawford.
Okay.
And for the emotional stuff that we have him going through, the PTSD and stuff, I think he's going to work really well. The more we talked about him, I'm like, oh, this is going to work out really well. You remember him from the first two pretty good seasons of Lethal Weapon before everything went to shit. For Venerius, I have Mads Mikkelsen, most recently from Polar on Netflix. For my dollars, not quite as old, but I mean, he's getting up there in age, but at least he's going to be a little more physical and he can still do the Weasley really well and we can use him a little bit more because of it. Robert Carlyle.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You see it?
Yeah. I totally see it. Yeah.
Now for the old master, I don't know why I didn't do Shokushugi right
and
away.
That's how I was going to go with.
Yeah. I mean, now that we've kind of teased it at the beginning, I'm like, duh. But originally I had Sammo Hung in that role. For our listeners who might not know who he is, he was a frequent partner of Jackie Chan's.
Yes, they actually did there were three of them that did a series of movies together, yeah.
Yeah, there were
three
of them.
They
were
three stooges of China.
It was, yeah, and Sammo Hung was more of the fat martial artist. Yeah.
And so agile.
So agile. Yeah. So I kind of like that idea of doing that, but I mean, come on, in hindsight, it should always have been Shokusugi.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I thought Sammo Hung passed away, though.
I didn't see that on the IMDb, it's going to be Shokusugi anyway.
Yeah.
For my Hook, the Hook, I went with Joseph Gilgan from Preacher and Misfits. Ironically, me just trashing Preacher, but
yes.
But I do like him. I like him quite a bit, and I like the idea of this guy who might have come up with this smarts from this kind of punk dude who's worked his way up in this organization. So here's this dude that's covered in tattoos, but still looks good. And it has the suit on because he's working for Venarius and he's that guy who's working the angles.
Yeah. I kind of like that idea. Yeah. Interestingly enough, I forgot that Jackie Rohaly was also in the first two seasons of Preacher.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. He was that guy with the meat.
Yes.
I think that rounds out my cast, and I'm pretty happy with that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think either cast would work. I like the idea of going with both. We both have very strong casts. Yeah, I like the idea of going with a Miss Park, certainly. Mm-hmm. And I think that sets up a really interesting possibility with our Marianne and Miss Park kind of battle,
mm-hmm.
right, where they do face off.
Mm-hmm.
I like that idea. I like that very much.
Yeah. God, I want to see this movie now.
I know. Yeah, I do really want to see it now.
I kind of miss the ninja genre. Like, it just never... You get an occasional movie that resurfices. I haven't seen the one he just said that was Ninja.
I don't think I've seen that one either, to be honest with you. I've seen Ninja Assassin, and I mean, it's... Wow, bloody.
It's bloody. It's still a really, like... It's a dark movie to kind of make things out at, and the blood is CG. Although it's used very well, yeah. It's still... It's not as... good as practical, but it works pretty good. And I got to say, Rain's not that bad at it for being one of his earliest acting roles.
Yeah. No, it's not bad. It's not
and
bad
I think
all,
still
yeah.
one of his only American ones.
I think this is like one of those co-production ones, too. I mean, because it is largely an Asian cast, if I were to
Yeah, call but everybody was speaking English yeah. in it, and yeah. nobody was cheesily voiced over, so.
No. I mean, another one of those movies that was kind of weak plot-wise, but...
Yeah. But well, I just watched it, and I thought it was still entertaining. It was weird seeing Han from Fast and the Furious at the beginning and as a badass getting tattooed and then gets his hands chopped off and then his head chopped off. Yeah. I'm like, oh no, I would have written this whole movie if you'd been in it.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
not the only Fast and the Furious guy in it, but.
No. But yeah, it was a fun movie. And I like to see this one sort of take that vein and not shy away from the violence of it.
No. Right?
Because I mean, culturally it's violent.
Yeah. Right?
And like I said, I want
R-rated action movies are doing well now, so yeah. Go for it.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, the biggest thing I want to see is when there's martial arts, I want them to be mm-hmm. graceful and elaborate and really buy into that whole mm-hmm. mystique of the ninja being sort of the almost supernatural.
Yeah, yeah. I want to lean into the folklore of it for sure. I think that's part of what makes the ninja movies really fun. Is when they embrace the folklore parts of the culture.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So, absolutely, like, the meditating and healing and that sort of thing. Like, there's some cool stuff there that is really fun to watch. And
yeah, and the acrobatics of it. Like,
there's lots of gritty martial arts movies that are starting to come out now. I mean, with the Raid and the John Wick movies and... some of the spy stuff like Red Sparrow and whatnot. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of it going on. There's a trailer for a new Luc Besson movie that's called Anna that looks fantastic. Lots of martial arts going on in these movies. So let's kind of go back to some of the other roots that haven't been tackled in a while.
Like, well, and exactly. And I mean, these movies aren't being sort of touted as martial arts movies. They're action films.
Yeah.
Right? What we're sort of proposing here is this is a martial arts film.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun, but it's a martial arts film.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
And really focus on...
Yeah, I kind of miss martial arts as a genre instead of a sport.
I think the thing is like, I mean, especially in the like early 90s, there was this sort of a really, really great resurgence of them mm-hmm. that got watered down by a lot of sort of shot in 10 days and then hit direct-to-video, kind of watering down that genre because you had actors like Bolo Young... Mm-hmm. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
He was that big, bull-chested guy. Yeah. He was so big.
Right. Even Michael Dudikoff was still active then. Mm-hmm. You had Jeff Wincott. You had
Wincott, I was surprised that didn't... Yeah, Cynthia Rothrock.
Yeah.
I was surprised that Wincott and Rothrock didn't get a better roles than they did. Especially Wincott. I thought he was a half-decent actor.
And his brother is actually the guy who plays the bad guy in The Crow.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yeah.
I like him, too.
Yes, I do, too. He's not as well known for martial arts, but... No. But yeah.
He's got that great gravelly voice, though. That's why he's always playing a villain.
Yes. and they're both did a lot of work in Canada. I think they're both Canadian, actually. Both from Eastern Canada. But yeah, like those actors, where they had these really great, capable martial artists who were also reasonably capable as actors. And we never really saw a lot of that because the martial arts movies were getting more and more made by studios like Canon.
Yeah, that's the thing. It got this...
And even smaller studios than that.
I think it got a stink on it as a low-budget, cheap genre for direct-to-video.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because, yes, they are low-budget to make. They don't cost a lot to make. Yeah. And I thought for sure that when you had Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon come out...
That we'd see more, yeah.
That we'd see more, especially as they sort of got into that magical wirework kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it just never really materialized.
Yeah, it didn't really take off here. Like, it's nice that the movie got here, and there was certainly a lot more of them being made, but they were still hard to find here in North America.
They were, and I mean, the only sort of...
See them in art houses.
Yeah. They were always small release films in North America, right? I mean, the only sort of martial arts actor who's sort of continually made movies and been successful at it for the most part over the last 20 years has been Jackie Chan.
Mm-hmm.
And his movies, to be honest with you, as much fun as they are to watch, are never good movies.
His Chinese ones are great. His American ones not as much because his English isn't very good. So just trying to get a grasp on the language to start with, and then trying to emote through that, it's difficult.
Well, that, and I mean, he's gone on record saying that he doesn't write movies. He writes action scenes and then ties it all together with stuff, right? Which is why the movies that he sort of does himself, like the Chinese ones that are so much fun to watch because they're almost entirely action, don't have much of a story.
Yeah. Right?
Because he doesn't worry about the story.
Yeah, that's part of why I've never really gone to a Jackie Chan movie to do, because there isn't much to grab onto.
No, there isn't. I mean, aside from like the Rush Hour movies and the ones he did with Owen Wilson, Shanghai Noon, Shanghai Nights. Yeah. Shanghai Noon's great. Shanghai Nights, not so much. All three Rush Hours are a blast. The second one, we were actually in Las Vegas when they were filming.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Which we found out after the fact. But yes, they are there.
Like, oh, that's why we couldn't get to that casino.
Yes. Well, I think they were getting ready to tear it down. They actually took advantage of the fact that it was closed down to do the filming there. But yeah, it's funny because we were seeing the movies like, hey, wait a fucking minute. That's what it looked like when we were, damn it.
We were just hung out outside 5 more minutes. We're going to watch that stunt.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, that, aside from those, and again, that's where I sort of thought maybe we'd see a new type of martial art genre coming out, because both those properties were very popular. At least the first movies were very popular, and the Rush Hour did reasonably well. I thought we'd see more of this sort of crossover Asian American martial arts stuff happening again, and then it just fizzled. We just didn't see it. And we had Jet Li come over and do a few movies, and we had Chow Yun-fat come over and do a few movies, right? I mean, Chow Yun-fat really isn't martial arts. He was
more of a gun guy.
Yeah,
he did a lot of the more gritty crime stuff.
Yeah, but certainly Jet Li came over and, I mean, did some really great movies that just didn't grab public attention. Like Romeo Must Die is a great movie that never really grabbed the attention of the masses. So I'd like to see more of these martial arts movies. And I think the problem is martial arts movies have a stigma. It's like, well, they only appeal to a certain type of person, right? To a certain type of moviegoer. And I don't think that's the case anymore. I don't think we're seeing like these old 70s movies, like the Street Fighter movies.
There was a lot of segregation of genres in the 70s and 80s, and it did feel like, well, this is an action movie, this is a martial arts movie, but we're seeing all that mixed together, and it always really was. But they always had to put it in column A, column B, column C. And even now, if they made this movie now, they probably would never use the words martial arts movie. They would probably just call it a straight-up action movie.
Well, and as it should be. Right? I mean, because even the Matrix movies, to a certain extent, are martial arts movies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, they're science fiction and they're action, but they've got all the right elements.
Yeah, they're completely based on anime and martial arts.
Yeah, and the whole cyberpunk movement of the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, there's no question that that's all kind of inspired by it. And cyberpunk was very much focused on martial arts as an art form.
Yeah, it's William Gibson, Ghost in the Shell, and a lot of that martial arts stuff. That's why it works. It's like, we all love this stuff. We're just not going to tell you that this is a martial arts movie. This is just a action sci-fi movie, and have at her.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I don't think that stigma's out there anymore. Like, we're starting to see that go away now. And things like Black Panther, maybe 20 years ago, it was a blaxploitation movie.
Yes.
Now it's just a movie.
Just a movie, and a damn good one at that.
Yeah, as well it should be.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. And I think that's ultimately the point that I'm trying to make. A movie should be just a movie.
Yeah.
Right? And
like, I'm excited for the next Shaft movie.
Oh, I'm so excited for it. I loved the first.
Coming from a blaxploitation genre, they're not calling that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be an action movie.
Yep.
And that's the way it should be.
And that is exactly the way it should be.
Yeah. Appeal to everybody.
Yeah. And it's kind of a little off topic, but I want to go back to the first sort of revisit of Shaft. And I love how it's very modern, but it still takes the nods and beats from the original Richard Roundtree Shaft movies. Yeah. It's got the sort of the humor, but it's also very modern at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of that in this upcoming Shaft movie.
Yeah, I thought the last one was okay. They weren't quite there yet, so.
Oh, no, it was definitely flawed, but I still had a lot of fun watching it.
Yeah, so I'm kind of hoping this one kind of cleans up some of the flaws of the last one and really embraces it, because it's still just like it seems to be sitting there on a shelf going, I could be great.
Yes, it does, and that's exactly the best way to put it, actually.
Hopefully they can do that without us.
Yeah, well, and I'll be honest with you, I think that Black Panther has opened the doors for a lot of that type of genre.
Well, and it shows that it's fine. Like, yeah. Audiences will come, yeah. Regardless of their creeds and colors. And
exactly. There's less of a stigma about, I mean, you know, we're getting into territory that we already talked about being uncomfortable talking about.
Yeah, ironically.
Yeah, ironically. Yeah. But I think that there's a lot less concern about potentially prejudiced audiences not going to a film that features predominantly or entirely black characters.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, Spike Lee's done a great job of trying to break that stigma for the last 30 years.
Not sure that he does, to be honest.
Yeah. more and more, like, baby steps. I think that he was the forerunner of that in a lot of ways, right? But in the 90s there, he moved into a pretty focused territory that did alienate a lot of potential white audiences for him. Right? I think he's moved back into an area where
his own politics and his own mouth gets him more in trouble than anything else.
Yes.
But, you know, I still enjoy his films.
For sure.
And there's things like Moonlight that win an Oscar and, like, fabulous. It's a fabulous movie.
A fabulous movie. And that's a great example showing how it's done well and can appeal to any audience.
Yeah. I mean, just tell me a good story and I'm there.
And that's the way it should be.
Yeah. And hopefully we can give you just good pod. I'm hoping that's what we did today, is gave you good pod. Give you good ear noise.
Yes. We hope.
Let us know if you like this episode, if you want us. I'm kind of almost want to do the next one. Like, what was the next one called? Return of the Ninja.
Yeah,
it's called The Return of the Ninja. So if you want us to, like, move on at some point, I mean, we're not going to do it right away, but, you know, that's the really good one out of the three. Yeah. The one we kind of were hoping we were watching, but weren't. So if you want to see us do another ninja movie, it doesn't have to be this one, but it could be another one. Let us know what your favorite ninja movies are and that you might want us to remake. I think this is a genre both of us would like to revisit at some point. You can let us know on our social media. We are at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram. And yes, we are getting a lot more stuff over on Instagram now. Thank you, Sam.
I've been having fun doing it.
And we are Invasion the Remake at gmail.com if you want to email us your suggestions, your corrections, your comments, and fan challenges. We are on our march to episode 200. And we want to open the doors to you guys here as well. We're going to start putting this out there. Send in your questions. Just if you got questions for us about the shows, about movies we've watched, let us know and put it out on our Twitter and our social media. We'll try to gather it up and maybe we'll try to answer some of those on our 200th episode. So I'm just putting that out there. If you got questions, ask them. We'll answer them. I don't know if we'll tell you the truth. We'll make something up. We'll make it good.
We'll try to make it worth listening to at least.
Yeah, absolutely. It might not be the truth, but it'll be entertaining. Or it'll be the truth and boring. I don't know. We'll try to. You'll get an answer.
Yes. Regardless.
Yes, and we'll try to get to as many as we can, but, you know, if obviously we get a shit ton. We'll have to cut it down to some of the best ones, but if you got questions, let us know, and we'll certainly try to tackle some of them. And if we get a lot, maybe we'll trickle it out through our lead into 200. What do you think, Sam?
Possibly. You're scaring me. I don't know what kind of questions we'd get.
Well, I mean, We'll weed out the crazies.
Oh, no, those ones are the fun ones.
What color of your underwear? What makes you think I'm wearing any? You know, I don't want those kind of questions.
No. No, definitely we want questions that are relevant to what we do, but
yeah,
for the most part, but we'll take other questions.
Yeah.
As long as they're interesting.
As long as they're interesting, absolutely. And, of course, we know you love the show and you will help us out any way you can. So leave us a 5-star rating and a short review over on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. That'll help let new listeners know how much you're enjoying the show and get more earballs on the show. Thanks for doing that with me.
Oh, no problem.
And of course, you can let them know how to find the show. We're a ton of different places. Just grab their phone, subscribe them. Hey Siri, subscribing to the Invasion of the Remake, you can do that. It works. It's cool. Let them know where we're at. We are on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Blueberry, Radio Public, and freaking YouTube. Goddamn YouTube, son of a...
YouTube wasn't the problem that time, Jay.
No, it wasn't. There are too many now. I can't remember them all.
To make it easy, just go to our Linktree page.
Oh, yeah, we got one of those. I even set that up. Yeah, if you're on our social media, we got a little link to the Linktree, and there's lots of places to click on that you can find us.
Yes, it makes it simple.
Yeah, but I can't say links. So just go
to our Twitter, go to our Facebook, yeah. Go to Instagram.
Click that blue thing.
Click on the link.
Blue Linktree thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll work.
That'll totally work. It's a lot easier to list them all off.
Yeah. All right, well, I've been Ninja, and you can't see me. Also, I've been Jason.
And I am always Sam.
And we are out of here.
So there you are.
Perhaps we'd better give in, sir.
Now we can talk. If you want your Mr. Parker alive, you better listen to me.
Who said I wanted Mr. Parker alive?
But, sir. Oh.
Now, wait, Ninja, wait. Why don't we speak like civilized men? You are a ninja, a hired assassin. Why don't you come to work for me? A position has become vacant.
I'm not for hire.
Then what were you doing working for Frank Landers?
He was my friend. You killed him, and now I'm going to kill you.